The Tolkien Road, Episode 248, Helm Hammerhand and the War of the Rohirrim. Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 248. Greta, what's up?
Hey, hey. You know, the huge.
Yeah.
Enjoying summer.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's July already.
I know.
I don't know where June went.
Did you enjoy your week off?
Yes, I did. But, you know, just enough.
Just enough.
I did miss it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was kind of nice having a
having
a little break.
It's a good thing for you that you spent all that time preparing for your Akalabeth, you know, leading the discussion on the next episode.
Yeah. That's what I do. I use my time wisely.
Yeah.
I'll get it done.
Don't,
I promise.
Don't we all use our time wisely?
Mm-hmm.
On this episode, we are going to be taking a close look at the legend of Helm Hammerhand and the War of the Rohirrim, which is the subject of a recently announced forthcoming animated film from New Line Cinema. Very excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons.
Ooh.
Right, so double up air five time. We're going to double up our air five for the patrons, and then we'll do our single air five for the YouTube watchers, right? So
okay.
I'm just saying, patrons, if you watch us on YouTube, you can get three, you know, triple the high fives, right? So there you go.
All right, so we're going to use both our hands?
All right, yeah, both hands.
Oh, both hands. Okay.
Get that hands right. off that coffee.
Right.
Don't hit your microphone stand either.
Too much to think about.
Three. Two, one, whoopsh. All right. Yep. Hand right there. There we go. End the video. All right. Yeah, so special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Lee Siu, Andrew T., John R., and Ms. Anonymous. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, guys.
And thank you to Paige H., a longtime patron who boosted her pledge. Thank you so much, Paige.
Awesome. Yes, thank you.
You too can become a patron of the Tolkien Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. I just want to say, people, now is the time to get in on the patronage thing. I'm really taking the game up. I'll be doing a lot more in the coming weeks, coming months. Got a lot planned. Going to be expanding kind of what we offer over here on the Tolkien Road, and I'm very excited about it. So now is your chance to get in and be like, I was part of the Tolkien Road before it was cool. Right. So head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road and, you know, get going on the patronage thing and you'll be happy you did. All right. You'll be happy you did.
All right.
More to follow. All right. iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. Leaving us a 5-star rating and a review helps get the word out about us. So we're just going great with our ratings over on iTunes and elsewhere. So we appreciate all of you who have weighed in recently. You know, every once in a while we do get some of those, like, you know, 1 or 2 star, you know, Negatronskis over there who want to, you know, make us feel bad for doing a Tolkien podcast and want to nitpick little things. And, you know, those people can kind of hurt our image in the eyes of the algorithm, right? And so when you leave a 5-star rating, it helps, you know, because you love the show. It helps get the word out. So just that simple action can really help us out a lot. We really appreciate it. So I wanted to give a shout out to I'm not sure it's actually our latest 5-star review, but this is a very recent one. Let me pull it up here. Got so many things going on. There we go. All right. This is from FF_Maven over on Apple Podcasts. From June 16th. FF Maven says, truly exceptional, 5 stars.
Ooh.
I loved the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit books and wanted to get an understanding of the Silmarillion before I read it, so I wasn't lost with all the new characters. This pod clearly has a respect for Tolkien's intentions when he wrote and does a good job laying out the possibilities of the meaning behind his writings in the Silmarillion. John and Greta are very relatable and endearing as they dialogue through the writings of Middle-earth, Aman, etc. It's an easy listen. I did not expect to find a podcast that encouraged me as I listen to kindred spirits who are positive, kind, creative, and funny. But that is what this pod is to me. Thanks for doing a great job. Your podcast is evergreen.
Ooh.
Thank you so
that's
much.
That's awesome. Well, thank you.
I mean, just put that in my veins right there, right? You know, just big boost of energy, big boost of enthusiasm, you know, want to just keep on creating, on journeying strong, you know, it makes me want to sprint down the Tolkien road, but I got to take it one step at a time, because the Tolkien road is meant to be a long and thorough journey that you appreciate every step of it, right?
That's right. That is a true shot in the arm. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your kind words. All right. Also, of course, it's time for the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5 for YouTube, right? So here we go. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsh! All right. So there you go. Hope you pressed your hand up against, you know, at least maybe don't want to touch your screen, but close to the screen to match ours on that one. Just head on over to YouTube where the episode is posted to participate. And while you're at it, subscribe and click the notify bell for our channel as I'm ramping up the release pace over there. So yesterday I just released my latest video standalone. So we're releasing every episode, the video for every episode of the Tolkien Road podcast on YouTube now. So you can watch, if you like to watch the people who are talking to you, you can go over there and do it. And then I'm also releasing additional videos, have done a couple in the last few weeks, and my latest is titled The Silmarillion, Three Big Problems and How to Fix Them. And it's already generating a good amount of discussion, so make sure to check it out. So I think it's a pretty, you know, I think I've got some pretty interesting ideas that people want to respond to.
Awesome.
And also, you know, you're going to hear me reading a lot more comments from over on YouTube. I love the way it's just easy for people to comment right there on whatever they're thinking, you know, and for those of you who go through and send and communicate with us in other ways, that's great too. And we're going to continue reading those. But I love that YouTube, you know, allows you just to kind of say your thoughts right then and there instead of having to go through and, you know, send an email and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, this comment I'm going to read here, and we'll have more later in the episode, but this latest one is from Messianic Jiu-Jitsu, who is one of our longtime listeners and has gone under different name, but that's his YouTube handle, of course. And I love what he says. All right, so Greta, I think I must have read this one to you offline because I feel like we discussed it already, but I just really appreciate this. So Messianic Jiu-Jitsu, June 21st says, man, it would be so deece if you two had a voice cameo in the new film for all of your Tolkien work.
Oh, you've not read that to me.
That's what I'm talking about right
there.
That's
awesome.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, how cool would that be?
I know.
That would be so cool.
I would not say no.
Nor would I.
So
that's awesome.
Very awesome.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Uh-huh. And you know, I hope they're listening to you.
They should be. They definitely should be.
I mean, with a name like Messianic Jiu-Jitsu, you better be listening, right?
For sure.
So
yes.
All right. So fantastic. So let's dive into this week's topic. Stick around, by the way, for, you know, correspondence at the end of the episode. Greta, you ready to nail down Helm Hammerhand?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes, I have my hammer in my hand ready to nail down Helm.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
You're welcome.
So, we are going to be looking at the legend of Helm Hammerhand. If you know, you've heard us talk about on past episodes, and I have a video over on YouTube that talks about this recently announced film from New Line Cinema. Just a couple of quick thoughts jumping out of that. I am so excited that New Line is doing this, and I think one of the reasons that dawned on me this morning that I'm very excited about it is I love that there's going to be competition in the realm of continuing to bring Tolkien to the screen, right? To, you know, visual representations of Tolkien to the screen. I think that competition is a good thing. I think it requires the people who are investing lots of money in these things to really question themselves and say, are we actually doing the thing that Tolkien fans are going to love, right? Mm-hmm. Are we actually creating the excellence that is worthy of Tolkien, right, through all of this? So I'm a big fan that New Line is doing this in addition to Amazon, and I hope it's just the first of many, many additional films, because I mean, I look through, you know, I look through the appendices of Lord of the Rings and I'm just like, there are so many stories that could be told here, mm-hmm. right? So many stories.
So many. Yeah.
It's almost endless if you really think about it, right? You might be able to make several films out of just this one story, quite honestly. But what we're going to be talking about today is the story of Helm Hammerhand as found in the appendices of Lord of the Rings, right? So, you know, we may have alluded to this tale. I know we discussed, you know, the appendices in the past when we did our long run through Lord of the Rings several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, at that point, Helm Hammerhand was just another legend among many legends, right, in there. And it was probably just a passing, you know, passing discussion of some interesting points. So this is the guy who helped, you know, that Helm's Deep is named after and that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's a really actually pretty interesting story, right? And I think there's a real opportunity to make this a pretty epic story too, right?
Yeah.
And in the sense of involving more than just, you know, it's going to be a Rohan-focused story, but I think there's an opportunity to involve more than just Rohan, right?
For sure. And I was thinking too, as I was in just prepping, reading the bit that you assigned to me,
mm-hmm.
that there's enough in here to go off of, but there's not too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a good basis, but I feel like there's room for, you know, maybe some creative license,
right?
A little bit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, and there's definitely room for creative license, and there's going to have to be some, you know, fleshing out of the story,
right,
for
sure.
Some
gaps filled. Yeah.
So, you know, again, that's where I'm glad there's competition in all of this, because, you know, I think if you, it's not absolutely necessary to have that, but if you look at, in my opinion, like what, you know, Disney has did with the Star Wars sequels, I think there was problems in the sense that they were just like, it's Star Wars, we can do anything, and it doesn't, you know, and do those words ever come out of anybody's mouth? No, but I think there's this assurance that it's like, it's Star Wars, how can it go wrong, right?
Mm.
And it's like, it can. Anything can go wrong, right? It doesn't matter what you're talking about. And so I love that there's this competition. And again, I think of like Spider-Man, right? The Marvel Cinematic Universe wants a piece of him, and Sony wants to hang on to him. They cooperated, made, you know, let him participate in all the Avengers kind of universe films. And then he had his own really awesome animated film, right? Which to me is like the template for what I hope New Line is trying to do here, right? Maybe not in the sense of how like crazy, kind of almost borderline psychedelic that movie was, but just in the sense of doing really awesome, a really amazing animated film that you just is like, this is what animation was made
just
for.
Visually stunning.
Right? Yeah, just visually stunning. And honestly, like well executed even on the story front.
Absolutely. Both and.
All right. So let's talk about this legend as we find it in the appendices. So, there's two places we find details about Helm Hammerhand in the appendices. All right. First of all, we have, I'm going to start with Appendix B. Appendix B, we find the Tale of Years, right? So, and this is where we find, you know, just a brief snippet of what we're talking about. So I'm going to read from the Appendix B of the Tale of Years here. So this starts, you know, what we find is in 2758 and 2759 of the Third Age. Okay. 2758. Rohan attacked from west and east and overrun. Gondor attacked by fleets of the Corsairs. Helm of Rohan takes refuge in Helm's Deep. Wulf seizes Edoras. And then 2758 to 59, the long winter follows. Great suffering and loss of life in Eriador and Rohan. Gandalf comes to the aid of the Shirefolk. And then in 2759, Death of Helm, Freyjalf drives out Wulf and begins the second line of Kings of the Mark. Saruman takes up his abode in Isengard, right? So there we have, you know, just a little snippet of everything that happens here. What I'll highlight is just, you know, we already know that Helm dies, right? So Helm dies in all of this. And Helm is a very significant figure on a number of fronts. If you'll recall, right, that scene from Lord of the Rings, it's not in the movie, but it's in the books, where you've got the two different burial mounds of the kings of the Mark, and there's like two different lines based on the first line of kings and the second line of kings, right? So Theoden is the last of the second line of kings, right?
Mm.
So, and then Helm is the last of the first line of kings, right? Okay. Now, they're all related, right? But basically, what we're going to find is that it's basically like the, you know, it's a close relation that takes over in place of Helm and starts the new line. So it's not just, it's like, you know, completely unrelated new dynasty. It's a related dynasty, but it's a new line of direct descent, right? And new line of direct ancestral descent. And then of course, just to mention the third line begins with, Éomer, right? Who is the sister son of Théoden, right? Okay. So the third line begins with him. All right. So some of the things to highlight from that note, Rohan attacked from the west and the east and overrun, right? So Rohan, this is about an attack that comes to Rohan, right? Some different factions decide to attack them. And this is not just a small skirmish. This is about something much larger. And we know that because we also find that Gondor is attacked, right? During this same period. And remember, Rohan was granted, the kingdom of Rohan was given this land by Gondor, right? By the steward of Gondor a few hundred years before this incident. And that's how these people came to be in this land of Rohan. And Rohan and Gondor existed in this like perpetual alliance where they were there to come to each other's aid, right? So we know that it's completely reasonable to guess that we're going to see a lot of Gondor, you know, in this story as well, right? Hitting the mic stand. It's not me you should be apologizing to. It's all of our listeners.
Sorry, listeners.
All right. And then let's see. Helm of Rohan takes refuge in Helm's Deep, right? So, and that's where the name Helm's Deep actually comes from, although this was a fortress that existed beforehand, right? It actually existed for a long time before then.
Oh, okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
So it was around. It just wasn't named Helm's Deep.
Yeah. I saw something that talked about it going back to the Second Age, that it was actually constructed by the men of Numenor. Right?
Oh, okay.
So, or at least they built a fortress there and it was carried on over the years. So this is, you know, fortress is thousands of years old. That area had been used as a fortress for thousands of years.
Okay.
And then Wolf seizes Edoras, right? So we're going to find out who this figure Wolf is and why he would seize Edoras. We see that Helm dies. So spoiler alert, it's right there. And then Freyjolf drives out Wolf and begins the second line of the Kings of the Mark. So anyway, this is 260 years before the main events of Lord of the Rings. And we find, even adjacent to this, we find mentioned Gondor, which we've already discussed, this long winter, which apparently plays into what's going on here. Okay, mm-hmm. So, and this long winter affects not just Rohan, but it affects all of Eriador, apparently, right?
And that's discussed, isn't it, in Lord of the Rings? Isn't it mentioned in passing, the event, like the long winter? Like, isn't it mentioned when they're at Helm's Deep and people are like, oh, isn't this,
I think you're right,
where they hung out during the long winter?
Yeah, I think you're right.
It was a little familiar to me. Like, I remember that it wasn't discussed in detail, but I feel like it was definitely mentioned, like as a historical mark.
Yeah, you may be right. It's not jumping out to me. You know, I should have done a quick search of it before.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Oh. I was just remembering that, like, the long winter was not a new thing to me.
We have discussed it before, right, though, because we would have discussed when we discussed the Tale of Years, like we went through the Third Age.
Right.
We really did that 8-episode run about 7 or 8 months ago where we just went through the Tale of Years for the Third Age and discussed all the different detail in there.
Yeah, so that would have been a part of that.
Yeah.
I just feel like it was mentioned by one of the characters in
It's absolutely possible. I just did a quick look up in the index of Lord of the Rings, and I didn't see it, but that doesn't mean it's not somewhere in there.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we find discussion. We also, you know, Gandalf was mentioned in there, and of course he was mentioned in the context of helping the Shire. But I just have this feeling that they're not going to miss an opportunity to involve Gandalf in this film somehow, and especially because Saruman, you know, does show up, right? Yeah. Sauron is definitely going to be in this, right? Because it's after, he doesn't help, but it's after the end of this whole affair that he comes to Isengard, right? And he seems to be there to help at first, right? Mm-hmm. After, you know, after this whole war is over. And so one thing I'll also say, and I didn't read this, but the next note that takes place 10 years later is the coming of Smaug to, you know, to Erebor. Oh, and you might think that's like, all, you know, way on the other side of, you know, the Third Age world, right? Like little region right there. So why would that matter? Stick around. We're going to talk about that, right? Why I think that might actually, we may not see Smaug, but it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility that we will, right? So,
all right.
More to follow on that, cool, on this episode. Okay. So, Return of the King, Appendix A provides a brief summary of the story. All right. So, Helm was the ninth king of the Mark, descended directly from Eorl, the first. Eorl. I have a hard time saying the Rohirrim names. Eorl, the first king. All right. So, Helm is the is in that first line of descent, you know, when they say fourth Eorlingus, right, that they're referring to where the, you know, where the people of Eorl, right? And so just a brief background on the story of Eorl, just to refresh your memory. So he was the first king to come to Rohan, and this was basically a people who existed like, you know, a group of men who existed in, you know, around the Mirkwood, east of the Misty Mountains kind of area right there. And they seem to have been related to like the Beornings, like the people that Beorn came from. But basically they assisted Gondor at one point in the, you know, several hundred years before these events. And for the great assistance they gave in Gondor's struggle at that time, they were gifted this land to the east, and they, you know, their people were permitted to settle there. All right. So that's the story of Eorl and how they became, you know, they came to settle there. All right. The people of Rohan. So, during Helm's reign, right, fast forwarding to the time of Helm, so roughly, you know, 2758 or a few years before that, during Helm's reign, he had something of a feud with a man named Freca, right? This man was a man of great wealth and power who lived to the west of the Gap of Rohan. Okay. So if you, you know, on your map, if you pull out your map from Lord of the Rings, and I'm going to look at the map that's map number three. You can see in the upper right of this map, you have Rohan, right? And then you see Helm's Deep down there. And you see the Gap of Rohan, right? Where the Fords of Isen are, like up here. So Freca dwelt basically where it says Adorn, right? This river that travels out and meets up with the Angren or Isen River right there. So it's kind of to the, you know, to the west of, you know, where most of the action we're familiar with Rohan takes place. All right. So this Freca fellow, he dwelt there roughly around where it says Adorn on there. And he was kind of a wealthy, you know, wealthy nobleman, if you will. So in 2754, Helm invites Freca to one of his councils and insults Freca in front of the other attendees. Basically, Freca proposes, you know, Freca's kind of an upstart. He proposes that his son, who we later learn is Wolf, marry Helm's daughter, right? So, you know, it's like he's trying to consolidate power, it sounds like, right? Mm-hmm. He's trying to get his family,
make an alliance,
you know, into that royal, yeah, that sweet royal power, right? Later, and then after, so Helm insults him, and basically says he's put on a lot of weight, right? And
he calls him fat.
Yeah, he does. Freca then threatens the king, right? Freca then threatens the king. You know, he's embarrassed. He's in front, because it's a public insult. Mm-hmm. Later, Helm and Freca go off to speak privately. Helm attacks and kills Freca and declares Freca's kin the king's enemies, driving them out of their lands. All right. So that's something we have to understand about this story. It's the story of this guy Helm, but and we think of the Rohirrim and we think of like Theoden and Éomer and Éowyn and all of these amazing heroes who we love and just seem like they're awesome, right? Helm, I don't know if you can call him the same. He's not a hero of that same type, right? If best, he's an anti-hero, and at worst, he's kind of a bad guy who brings this on himself and does injury to his own people, but has to. So it's going to be a very complicated. It's going to be a very complicated process to tell this story, right? especially when we associate this, like, you know, this nobility and goodness with the people of Rohan, right? And the heroes of Rohan. Helm is a little different. Helm is a little different. Now, obviously, I'm not saying there's obviously a lot to a story like this, right? But in terms of the details that we get from Tolkien and the Freca versus Helm incident, I was like, dang, Helm.
Yeah.
You killed this guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It doesn't even, like, I'm trying to figure out what made him so mad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what, you know, it was almost like he just wanted to kill someone and Freca was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You want
to
be like, surely Freca, like, almost killed him first or something?
Right. But he was the one that was insulted. Freca was.
But we didn't get any of this in it, right?
Yeah.
Now, to be sure, you know, I think some of the details that happened before this allude to the notion that maybe Freca wasn't, like, had been doing some bad things, right? Mm-hmm. Had maybe been, that Helm had reason to distrust him, you know? But even so, I think, you know, especially for us nowadays, we have a hard time looking at this and just being like, how is Helm not the bad, not at least a bad guy in this, right?
Right.
I mean, he just seems to have, he seems to have kind of like killed him in cold blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all that's to say, like, maybe Helm brought a lot of this on himself, right?
That's fair. Yeah.
What, you know, what's about to transpire. Mm-hmm. So Freca, Helm kills Freca, and then he declares Freca's kin the king's enemies and drives them out of their lands, right? And that seems to be, you know, the last we hear from the Frecalings, if you will, for some time, right? For at least a few years. So that was 2754. And then 4 years later, in 2758, Rohan is attacked by Easterlings and subsequently by Dunlendings, led by none other than Wulf, the son of Freca. Right? Mm. So the Dunlendings, right? These are the people, and we actually see them again in Lord of the Rings, but these are the people of Dunland. And Dunland is, if you, again, look at your map in the Lord of the Rings, that same map we were looking at before. So basically, Dunland is to the... that's not a good picture of it right there. Anyway, it's the area, like, to the northwest of Isengard, right? And this is a, you know, this is a group of people who have they're kind of historical rivals with Rohan, right? It's a, that'll be, again, an interesting sort of thing to explore, is this, you know, the dynamics and causes of this rivalry. But we do know that, like, later on, the people of Dunland, the Dunlendings, actually lend their assistance to Saruman when he's attacking Rohan. So, you know, in some sense, we're going to get a story with this that's not, that's maybe not as clear-cut, black and white, you know, kind of moral dynamics as we've seen, as maybe we're accustomed to because of Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm,
you know, what you have here is maybe a much more realist human story of, like, different groups of men, like, in rivalry with one another and historic blood feuds, right, going mm-hmm. on. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be an interesting thing to explore in all of this.
So, is Wulf a Dunderling?
Or
Dunlending, sorry.
Basically, Freca, it's like rumored that he's like a descendant or partially descended from the Dunlendings, and that's like a point of, like, that's a point of derision, right? Because, again, the Rohirrim look down, they it's almost like they kind of look at the Dunlendings and they think they're, like, lesser men than they are, okay. Right? You know, they're, because, you know, you think with Rohan, they're like, well, we're best friends with Gondor, right? You know, so we've got that, like, you know, Numenorean association going on, right? Even though we're not Numenoreans ourselves, they're our best friends, right? And you Dunlendings are, like, you know, weird with all your backward ways and, you know, this kind of stuff. Well, so Freca, it sounds like, the rumor is that he is descended from the Dunlendings, right?
Okay.
And so Wulf would be as well, okay?
Okay.
But it maybe Freca was trying to maybe, you know, not emphasize that so much because he wanted power in Rohan, so Wulf leads this attack on Rohan and it appears to be a coordinated attack, right? Because they're coming from the west and then other Easterlings attack as well, right, from the east, okay? So these may be also some historic enemies of Rohan and Gondor as well. And this is, of course, where Gondor comes into the story, because though Rohan and Gondor exist in perpetual alliance, Gondor comes under siege itself by the Corsairs of Umbar to the south.
So they're not able to help Rohan.
Right. It's almost like it has to have been coordinated, right? But basically, mm-hmm. enemies seem to come from all angles against Rohan and Gondor, right?
Yeah.
And it's like they're trying to take them out at once. So this mm-hmm. is not, again, this is not just some like little regional skirmish. I mean, this is a war on the scale, on a scale approaching what we see with the War of the Ring, right? This is a large assault on both Rohan and Gondor from all angles, mm-hmm. involving different groups of people, different groups of historical enemies. The one thing we don't see a lot of discussion of is orcs and the kind of forces that we associate with, Sauron, right? Non-human, non-men forces. Mm-hmm. But I will say that when I looked up this and the peoples of Middle Earth, right? And I looked up Helm Hammerhand and the peoples of Middle Earth, and the original version of this that we find, the appendices that we find there, actually mentions that orcs attack as well, right? Mm. They aren't mentioned here, but we can, I think it'd be fair game to bring orcs into the equation somehow, right? Okay. So even though Sauron had not, come forth and like fully revealed himself as coming back again, we know this is getting close to the time when he would. So we might think like, maybe the Easterlings include orcs, and we have a little bit of the our castle in Mirkwood, in southern Mirk, Dol Guldur, right? We have maybe some action coming from Dol Guldur, okay. Maybe some Sauron doing some things in the shadows as well, right? So that's also possible, that it could enter into the equation. Helm and his army are driven from Edoras and take up refuge at the Hornburg, the fortress of what will become known as Helm's Deep, right? It's the thing we see in Lord of the Rings, and we commonly refer to as Helm's Deep. With Edoras abandoned by Helm's men, Wolf slays Haleth, Helm's son, and takes up the throne of Rohan for himself, right? Mm. So it sounds like Helm has three sons. Haleth was the heir to the throne, right? Was the oldest and the heir to the throne. He stays behind to try to protect Edoras, and Wolf slays him, right? So, getting pretty ugly. Helm has two other sons that follow him to Helm's Deep, and that's when they take up their abode. The people of Rohan take up their abode then, and the Long Winter follows. So I'm gonna read a little excerpt about the Long Winter.
So they're at Helm's Deep,
right,
for their Long Winter,
right?
Yeah.
And Wolf now is the claims the throne of Rohan for himself, right? Okay. So Long Winter. Here's a little description. Soon afterwards, the Long Winter began, and Rohan lay under snow for nearly 5 months. Both the Rohirrim and their foes suffered grievously in the cold and in the dearth that lasted longer. In Helm's Deep, there was a great hunger after Yule, and being in despair against the king's council, Hama, his younger son, led men out on a sortie and foray, but they were lost in the snow. Helm grew fierce and gaunt for famine and grief, and the dread of him alone was worth many men in the defense of the burg. He would go out for himself, clad in white, and stalk like a snow troll into the camps of his enemies, and slay many men with his hands. It was believed that if he bore no weapon would bite on him. The Dunlendings said that if he could find no food, he ate men. That tale lasted long in Dunland. Helm had a great horn, and soon it was marked that before he sallied forth, he would blow a blast upon it that echoed in the deep, and that so great a fear fell on his enemies that instead of gathering to take him or kill him, they fled away down the coombe. One night, men heard the horn blowing, but Helm did not return. In the morning, there came a sun gleam, the first for long days, and they saw a white figure standing still on the dike, alone, for none of the Dunlendings dared come near. There stood Helm, dead as a stone, but his knees were unbent. Yet men said that the horn was still heard at times in the deep, and the wrath of Helm would walk among the foes of Rohan and kill men with fear. So that's kind of the legend of Helm Hammerhand, right? That killing men with his bare hands, that, during this long winter, he would go out and he would just slay he would go out himself and just slay the enemies with his hands, right? And if he needed to, he'd just eat them, right? Oh. So, Helm, very interesting figure, very interesting legendary figure, in the history of Rohan. I think he brings upon himself you know, the end of his own line, right? With, you know, you might look in the moral world of things and say, like, he, you know, he got what was coming to him with what he did to Freca. Not saying that Freca was, you know, perfect, upstanding individual, but, you know, killing him in cold blood like that, and then he loses his own sons, right? Mm-hmm. And so his line is ended. But at the same time, he manages to restore Rohan to, he doesn't manage to restore Rohan, but it will eventually be restored. So Helm dies through all of that. But once the long winter breaks, Freyjalf, Helm's sister son, right? So basically Helm's nephew, leads a small band of men to Meduseld, and Surprising Wolf slays him and claims the throne, right? So Freyjalf returns. We can kind of think of this much like, you know, Éomer taking over for Théoden after, you know, Théoden pays the price for maybe, you know, ultimately I think redeems himself, but pays the price for, maybe his sloth in coming to the aid of Gondor, right? You know, we can see that Helm pays this price, loses his own life, loses the lives of his sons, loses his line, but his sister's son, Freyjalf, restores the throne to Rohan, to the Eorlingus, and becomes the first of the new line of kings of the Mark. So,
and that's the line that Théoden is the last of. Is that correct?
Right.
That is correct. Freyjalf, and then right. Ends with Théoden.
And then Éomer begins a third line of the kings,
gotcha,
of the Mark.
Okay.
Yeah. So with the breaking of the winter, the Rohirrim are able to gain an advantage over their invaders, with Gondor coming to their aid. And it should also be noted that it is in this year that Sauron appears at the crowning of Freyjalf and takes up his abode in Isengard with the blessings of both Gondor and Rohan. So Sauron, you know, shows up. This is what leads to Sauron coming to Isengard. And at first he appears to be a good guy, and he's welcomed by both Rohan and Gondor, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's this legend in a nutshell, the essentials of what we get and presumably of what New Line has the cinematic rights to tell, right?
Hmm.
So Greta, what jumps out to you about that, about all this?
About the tale?
Yeah.
Of Helm? It's not, like you said, it's just not cut and dry. Like, mm-hmm, there's lots of gray area, and there's, it's going to be interesting to see how they portray Helm, I think, because he's a very complicated individual, mm-hmm, for sure.
Well, and the thought occurs to me that this is truly a more Game of Thrones like tale.
Yes.
Knowing very little about Game of Thrones myself, other than just that it's like I've heard it described in ways to basically put it like Lord of the Rings, but in an amoral universe, right? Mm. Where it's like might makes right. Is mm-hmm, the only thing. So
yeah, it's definitely. I feel like they're gonna have a hard time making it like young child friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though it's animated, I think it maybe need be rated like PG-13 or something.
And I don't think it needs to be, right?
No, but I mean, like, just the subject matter alone. If they're gonna be true to the story, I mean, there's cannibalism, mm-hmm, right? There's murder. There's, you know, lots of violence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, I think we can be, just the fact that it's animated or going to be animated doesn't mean it's going to be appropriate for all ages.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, well said. Well said. I mean, it strikes me that this is a great legend with the potential to bring together so many disparate things we love about Middle Earth. And again, I hope it begins, you know, an aesthetic that allows them to tell more stories from the Third, mm-hmm, Age, from different points, mm-hmm, in the history of, you know, of the Third Age. A couple of other notes worth mentioning. It's not clear if or how hobbits will play a part in this story. We may recall that Théoden does not seem familiar with hobbits when he first meets Merry and Pippin, and their lands are separated by a long and perilous distance. You know, so it doesn't seem like hobbits would have had a great part in this. You know, you would think that they would be remembered by Théoden if they had, right? But I will say that just 11 years before the events of the War of the Rohirrim is the battle in which Bandobras Took leads a hobbit army in defeating an orc band, right?
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so it could be something like, you know, Gandalf decides that he's going to lead a hobbit army in attacking the Dunlendings from behind, right? And the people of Rohan never hear, like, don't hear all the details about that, but just hear some kind of, you know, distant, you know, oh, there was this, some mysterious people came to the aid of us, and we don't know anything about them, right? They live far to the north, right?
Right.
So who knows? Like, you can first, you know, envision how they might be worked into the story. And I just have this sense that New Line is not going to miss an opportunity to include hobbits and Gandalf.
Right. And it also mentions in the timeline that Gandalf came to the aid of the Shire folk.
Yeah.
Right? Like, during the same time period that this is all happening.
Right.
Right? So if they're going to have multiple fronts of the storytelling, then they could come into play.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just think New Line... And Tolkien would have had to say, like, hobbits are not involved in this at all. Do not include hobbits in any future film productions of this in order to prevent them from doing that. And then even then, they'd probably find a way around it. All right. So, and then the next thing I wanted to note is that 11 years after the events, Smaug attacks Erebor, driving out the dwarves, and destroys Dale. Again, this may be a little bit more of a stretch, but I would not be surprised if Smaug factored into this story somehow, especially given that Fromm, an ancestor of Rohan's first king, Eorl, slew the dragon Skatha, right? So there is a history of bad blood between the Rohirrim and the dragons, right? Mm. So I could totally see them doing something where it's like Smaug, you know, maybe sees an opportunity to get revenge on his brother dragon Skatha, if that's the right term.
So are they descended? Like, is Smaug descended from Skatha?
I don't think so. I think they're... I don't know about that.
But they're both dragons.
We're going to do an episode on dragons in Middle-earth soon, right? That's definitely on my list of things to do soon, because that's such an interesting point of lore. And my point is that I can see them working in Smaug to the equation somehow, right? That maybe, you know, Smaug is, like, attacks from the east or something like that, and he's, you know, he's finally driven back, or he hears about, you know... he hears about a weakness, or he hears about a treasure hoard up in the north near this mountain, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I could see, you know, again, if they have an opportunity to bring in Smaug, I kind of think they're going to do it, but we'll see.
Okay, cool.
All right. Any other thoughts, Greta?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
That was really good. I like that.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm very excited about the story.
When is the anticipated release date? Is it next year?
Yes. Well, I don't know that there's been a release date given, but I would have to say it's probably going to be sometime next year. I think it's got to be next year, because I got to imagine they're going to be trying to capitalize on what Lord of the Rings on Prime is going to be. You know, I think Lord of the Rings on Prime is going to be coming within the next year, right? I think I've been hearing lots of rumors about marketing plans and that kind of thing, and it sounds like we're going to start maybe seeing trailers, like, later on this year for the show, and then I think it's going to be released at some point early next year, the first season. Okay. And then I think from there, I got to imagine New Line wants to capitalize on all that. So
probably. So I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to be asked to do voice cameos for the film, is there a particular character or you know, place of the story that you would prefer to have your voice heard?
I think I would just look for any opportunity to do my amazing Cockney accents. and you would obviously try to do some kind of variation on your Australian
British combo thing.
We're not bred to be born voice actors, but maybe we are. Maybe we'll just be in a bunch of people who are, like, you know, the crowd of Dunlending shouting as they
I think that could work.
Attempt to raid or something. Maybe we can be orcs.
Orcs? I don't want to be an orc. I don't know. I was thinking about it. It doesn't really seem that there's any female players in this saga.
Well, there is Helm's daughter. We hear that.
You know,
There's gonna be plenty of females in the story.
There has to be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure that you know, New Line will assign us the perfect roles.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really need to worry about it too much.
I mean, it's done. Done deal. At this point, I'm sure it's gonna happen. So
We can dream. We can dream. It's fine.
Messianic Jiu-Jitsu, it's on you now. You got to find the right people at New Line and tell them what's up.
You have your orders.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that about wraps up our discussion of Helm the Hammer Handed. Do you think we missed anything? Drop us a line and let us know. Do you think our other ideas are crazy? Drop us a line and let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A couple of shorter items of correspondence to mention. First of all, we have a note from David Bigwood on June 13th. David writes and says, that's not it. There we go. This is in response to episode 244 on volume 10 of the History of Middle-earth, Morgoth's Ring. David says, the reason elves did not remarry after the death of a spouse was because in time, the deceased would have spent their time in the halls of Mondos and returned. If their spouse had married during that time, then they would have two wives or husbands. The case of Finwë and Myriel was unique because Myriel said she would never return. Interesting. Okay. Finwë asked for and was granted special leave to remarry under these special unnatural circumstances. Maybe some of the tragedy that followed was due to this.
Interesting.
And he goes on to say, I'm enjoying the overview of the history of Middle-earth. Good idea. It reminds me of bits I haven't read in too long. Yeah. So glad you enjoyed it. I'm really glad we did it. You know,
It was worthwhile.
It was, you know, like we said during the time, it was a little bit of a slog, but at times, but there was also a lot of, like, I'm just glad I know like what's in all of these things now. And there's so many things I want to go back and cover in more depth now as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
It was a good overview.
I'm glad you appreciated it. And thanks for sharing that little,
I didn't know that they would return.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Because they go to the Hall of Mondos when they die. And,
right.
You know, so.
But I just never thought of them coming back.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought of that either.
From the Hall of Mondos.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of a...
I guess in time they would. Yeah.
Permanent thing, but...
I know that's one of the topics that's going to be... that's going to be covered in the new Tolkien book, The Nature of Middle-earth, which is... I think it's coming out early September. Mm-hmm. You know, edited by Carl Hostetter. So... make sure and check out that book, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about. I think elfish reincarnation is maybe going to come up in that topic. So I think that's something he's alluding to here.
Neat.
All right. Thanks, David.
Yes, thank you.
Our next, we have three notes from our YouTube channel. The first is from Lord Farquaad on June 13th. Lord Farquaad says, in response to episode 239, volume 6, The Return of the Shadow, first watch on YouTube, on 239 on Spotify. Haven't had a chance to look through all of the YouTube content yet, but I'll definitely check it out.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for giving us a shout out over on YouTube, Lord Farquaad. Mm-hmm. And awesome that you're listening. Awesome that you're keeping in touch. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Our next note is from Joey S., longtime listener and patron. This is also on YouTube in response to my video, Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim, 10 Things You Need to Know. Joey says, I'm excited about this. Rohan has not been as explored as Gondor has in regards to their history in the books and movies, so this could be a lot of fun. It will come down to the animation for me. Mm-hmm. Some styles would definitely work for Lord of the Rings, and some wouldn't fit so great. I'm not familiar with the animator's work, but he's got to be pretty good for New Line to choose him. This could be a great step forward for future stories to be told. Maybe even some from the Silmarillion someday.
Mm,
yeah.
Yes.
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 Mm-hmm. Yes. So many. I don't know. Just this. This blows the future of it all wide open, right?
Assuming they do it well.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just.
I agree. I think the animation style is gonna. It's gonna be really important that they get that right.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. I think it needs to be pretty realistic, but not lose kind of that edge of fantasy at the same time.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
I kind of hope they take. You know. Obviously, Tolkien wasn't a caliber of an artist that, you know, most animators would be, like professional animators would be.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always just loved his style, and I hope they pay close attention to his style, you know, and the, like, you know, just learn something from, even if it's a rudimentary style, like learn something from that, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe about how he envisioned the world, and try and incorporate that into how they envision the world, right? Take that style to the next level, you know.
Yeah.
All right. And then our last note from, last one we'll mention from our correspondence this week is Andrew L. on June 21st. So Andrew is also responding to my video on the War of the Rohirrim film. And Andrew does not want hobbits. Andrew says, I can think of a good reason to not include hobbits in this film. They had absolutely nothing to do with the events in Rohan and were dwelling in the Shire by this time. Similarly, it seems unlikely that Gandalf would have been involved in these events. it's possible that the Long Winter and the Shire could be covered in a separate project. Mm. Now Saruman might be involved in some capacity. He came to dwell in Isengard around this time. So, you know, fair enough, Andrew, mm-hmm. and I don't disagree with anything that you say there. I'm just, my point is, there's thinking like, you know, thinking like a fan, you know, a Tolkien fan, like we all are, and being like, well, it says the notes that Tolkien gave us, you know, it doesn't seem like it's really possible. But for a film executive who's trying to make sure this thing is makes as much money as possible, they're going to say, how do we get hobbits into this? Right?
Yeah.
And honestly, this even applies, like, I think Latron Prime, they're going to find a way to bring hobbits into it, right? I don't know exactly how, and it may not be hobbits, like the ones we're familiar with, but they want to bring the, you know, the little people, some kind of cousins of the Shire, into that as well, I feel certain of. So, because it was Tolkien himself who said that the hobbits make everything more relatable, right? You know, just to paraphrase some things he said, but he got it that hobbits do make the stories of Middle Earth more relatable to people, and they make them more popular.
Yeah, so, and they're familiar, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people think of when they think of Lord of the Rings. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it would definitely, it would draw more viewers, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Andrew, I agree with you, and I agree with where you're coming from, but my point is, I don't think I would be surprised if New Line doesn't find a way to bring hobbits into it, at least somewhat, right? So we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
But maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. All right. Well, that's our correspondence for this week. We'd love to hear from all of you all. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, etc. In our next episode, Greta, by popular demand, is going to lead an Al-Calabaeth discussion.
Oh, that's our next episode?
Yeah.
I better get to work.
All right. That's all for this episode, everybody. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Lisa U.
Andrew T.
John R.
Ms. Anonymous.
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Joey S.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
And Julia.
As well as those celebrating their patron anniversary in July: Chris L.
David of Pints with Jack.
Joey S.
And Eric S.
Thank you all so much.
Yes, thank you guys.
Thanks to everyone who listened. We'll talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.